RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Michael Riedel has spent 30 plus years doing economic analysis and policy advice in a range of institutions in New Zealand and overseas. Most of that time was at the Reserve Bank, where he ran a number of areas, including a spell as head of financial markets, responsible for monetary policy implementation, foreign reserves management, and the analysis of financial system risks. He spent 25 years or so on the equivalent to the OCR advisory group to the governor, and many years on the bank's key internal financial regulation policy committee. Michael writes at croakingcassandra.com. And from Michael's latest piece at Croaking Cassandra, which went up on July 3rd, headed up Reading Reserve Bank Plans and Budgets. There are graphs in there. There are names in there. There is woke language in there. So we wanted to get to Michael and find out, well, first of all, the piece he's written, what's all about, and what he thinks it says about the Reserve Bank. Michael Riedel, welcome back to RCR. Thanks for coming back.
No, it's fine, Paul. Good to be here.
Okay, so I note that these the charts, first of all, you use in this, and we'll talk about some of the numbers on that, came from Chartered Daily Twitter account. Is that someplace people can go to see what graphs and stats and stuff? Is that what that is?
Yeah, I don't know who's behind it, but it started up relatively recently, and he puts up an interesting, or she puts up an interesting chart each day on Twitter, so, or X, you know, worth following if you're at all interested in New Zealand data, not just economic.
Yeah, and some of this data tells an interesting story, I think. I wanted to start by asking about Neil Quigley. He's been reappointed. I haven't heard the name before. Of course, I've heard of Adrian Orr and seen him plenty of times, but Neil Quigley has been reappointed as chair of Reserve Bank's, the Reserve Bank's board, despite previous criticisms I'm reading here. And this reappointment has been defended by some government officials who weren't so supportive not too long ago. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, Neil's been the chair of the Reserve Bank board now for 8 years. That's a long time in government roles. It's pretty common to turn over people. And there was widespread expectation that when his term expired on the 30th of June, he would naturally be replaced. Naturally, both because he'd been there for a long time, but as importantly, because both National and ACT, and I think New Zealand First, had also been very unhappy with the Reserve Bank. Both National and ACT had opposed Adrian Orr's reappointment in 2022. Grant Robertson had gone ahead and done that anyway. Government can't do anything about getting rid of Adrian until his term expires in 2028. But the chair who'd recommended his reappointment could have been got rid of and should have been got rid of. Pretty much everything that the Reserve Bank has done that's delivered us the high inflation, that's delivered us all that woke stuff that you're going to talk about later, Neil's been right behind and been championing. So it was quite staggering. It remains quite staggering that the minister and the cabinet chose to reappoint him.
Can we speculate on why that might be? Was he, you know, incredibly persuasive in the meeting or something? There has to be some explanation.
I mean, Neil, who's the Vice-Chancellor at Waikato University, is well-known as a sort of pretty effective wheeler-dealer. He makes himself useful to ministers. He, at the moment, is trying to get this third medical school set up at Waikato University, and National had campaigned on that, been this sort of arrangement between him and Shane Retty where Quigley had gone on record in an email rather rashly as saying, we'll have this thing at the start of 2027, which will be a nice present for your second term of government. So sort of surprising degree of sort of rather naive things to put in writing. I don't think he's a National Party hack or anything of the sort like that. He just makes himself useful. Personally, I think it says more about the fact that the Minister of Finance, even though she was very critical of Adrian in opposition, doesn't really care about it that much. It's just not a priority issue for her.
I think you mentioned in your piece that there's also an argument that any changing of positions sends out the wrong smoke signals to the world.
Yeah, it's a strange argument that was made by David Seymour. I mean, ACT has been even more strongly opposed to Orr than anything else, and he talks about this chopping and changing idea. Well, you know, Neil has been on the board since 2010. It'll be a 16-year term by the time this term ends. He's been chair for 8 years. Turning over somebody when their term expires isn't a particularly radical concept. The government's done it in plenty of other boards. They've been replacing people this week on the Kayangora board, the Kiwi Rail board, the chair of Health New Zealand, the chair of NZTA, so on and so forth. It just wouldn't have been unusual, particularly in this case, because the term was expiring. It's not like coming in and just saying, oh, you're out for the sake of it.
There's been a bit of a, well, over the time anyway, quite a number of staff leaving, right? I think in 26 or so. Is that after Adrian Orr started? Has that indicated like a shift in the way or the type of people staffing the Reserve Bank now?
Yeah, I mean, that statistic was about the senior management groups. So Adrian's massively increased the number of senior managers in the bank and also turned over a lot of them. In some cases, that was his doing. In other cases, it was people not wanting to work with him and moving out. In a couple of cases, it was people that he promoted and then seemed to push out very quickly thereafter. So he had a very rapid turnover of people at the top, and that left them with not much in the way of expertise or experience at the upper levels in the bank. Adrian's well known for not really tolerating dissent or debate. He likes having yes people around him. You know, yes people who are able can be quite useful, but you also need challenge and dissent in anything like monetary policy where there's just a huge amount of uncertainty.
All right, to a couple of these graphs. Reserve Bank staff expenses, over 100 million, right?
Yeah, and up another 20% this year. So, you know, almost every government agency, as we all know, has been having to make quite severe cuts in the last few months. And yet the Reserve Bank plans to spend 20% more in 2024-25 than it did last year. It's quite extraordinary. Now, the way the Reserve Bank is funded, they have an agreement every 5 years with the Minister of Finance, and the current agreement runs until the 30th of June next year. So the government couldn't compel them to cut their spending, but it would have been quite reasonable for the government to have expected that they'd alter their behaviour, they'd recognise the times that they were in, and they'd wind things back somewhat. And the best parallel is with ACC. You know, ACC is not funded directly by Parliament either. It wasn't covered directly by the spending cuts, but nonetheless, their chief executive and board both chose to make voluntary savings, to look around and take some of that fat out of the organisation. No sign of that at all from the Reserve Bank.
With your knowledge of things, does the Reserve Bank need more staff, more grunt in the machine?
They're picking up one new function. It's a deposit insurance scheme that will cover bank deposits. And there's probably a little bit more in the way of staff required there. But no, I mean, they've had a massive increase in staff numbers in the time that Adrian has been the governor, like so many other government agencies around Wellington. And quite a lot of those Official Information Act releases show are people doing non-core things. You know, there's Māori advisors and climate change advisors and cultural advisors and this, that, and the other thing. The number of people they've had actually doing monetary policy, their core function, has barely changed at all. So, yes, I think there was plenty of room to take fat out of the organisation.
So they're moving away strictly from being a reserve bank, are they, and becoming some sort of social institution, well, I don't know what you call it, as well?
I think the as well is the key thing. I mean, they're certainly doing their day job, not necessarily particularly well, as we've seen with the outbreak of inflation. But the bank does seem to have been being used as a bit of a platform by Adrian and the board, perhaps Neil, to advance personal agendas of the senior management. So they've been running this line for some years, a sort of analogy of the governor as a tree god or the bank as a tree god. They've been pushing very, very strongly treaty issues. They've got a Te Ao Māori strategy that takes up two pages at the front of their statement of intent. And you know, many of these things are maybe quite important in organisations that work at the coal face. You know, if you're dealing as the Ministry of Social Development or the Department of Corrections, some of those cultural issues really matter different to clients. Yeah. But the way the Reserve Bank operates, it operates in financial markets. An interest rate is an interest rate is an interest rate. It affects you or me or a Pacific person or an Asian person, a Maori person, in just the same way. There just isn't a mandate for this. There's nothing in the Reserve Bank Act that mentions any obligation in this direction. It's just their agenda, much the same with climate change. you know, Eric Crampton at the New Zealand Initiative's highlighted over the last few years that there have typically been more references to climate change in the bank's annual report than there are to inflation or monetary policy, which has been even more extraordinary in the last couple of years when inflation has been so high and their misjudgments in that area have been so evident.
Boy, the tentacles of this ideology go deep, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
And into everything almost.
Yeah. And it's, again, it's another one of those areas where it's surprising that the new government that actually campaigned against some of this stuff last year chose not to replace the chair of the board. And I'm not quite sure what that tells you about the government and their priorities, but it is a little bit disconcerting because, you know, we delegate a lot of power to an organization like the Reserve Bank, and it's right that we do so. But what you want is an organization that's generally respected as being nonpartisan, that's not pursuing anything outside its own statutory responsibilities. You don't want, you know, when Don Brash was there as governor, he was sometimes accused of using it as a bit of a platform for right-wing economic causes. That was problematic, in the same way that what Orr's doing now is problematic.
I'm thinking back now to what you said regarding David Seymour's comments, you know, this chopping and changing, yep, switching around. It almost feels like someone's had a word in his ear, you know, from offshore or somewhere, that this is how we want things done now. And these guys are on our team, and it wouldn't be a good look. Because I'm thinking of some of those big financial institutions in the world that promote all this stuff.
Possibly, but I don't think in the international financial markets, Adrian or the bank have particularly high standing at the moment. They're sort of regarded as not entirely serious. And even though people are often quite sympathetic to those woke causes, the bank is just not the institution it was. And it's sort of widely looked at from offshore as, my goodness, what's happened? They've gone downhill. Okay. The levels of analytics aren't there. Personally, I think in Seymour's case, I mean, he's bound by cabinet collective responsibility. Nicola Willis will have taken the lead on this one. He was probably just trying to be helpful and provide some cover for Willis.
Okay.
But it was a bit strange.
Yeah. Now I'm looking at the RBNZ operating expenses by output class. Engagement with the public and other stakeholders, 35 million. What? How do you get to that?
Exactly the question that I asked when I first saw the numbers. I mean, when I first saw them, that Chartered Daily person put it out, I go, well, I'm pretty sure this person's read the documents right, but I struggle to believe it. But it's there in their own numbers. It's not clear what's in that number, but it's just a staggering number. You know, the government's cutting funding for budget services. It's cutting things. It's always under pressure on health, cancer drugs, and those sorts of things. So whatever's in it, it just does not look like a high priority use of public money. They say in their documents that what they're concerned about is, you know, garnering public trust and all those sorts of things. The main way government agencies get public trust is by doing their job well, delivering results. Now, you know, I don't think $35 million is going to be spent on some mass advertising campaign. I suspect a fair amount of it covers these functions that aren't really their job at all those climate change advisors and Te Ao Māori advisors and so on and so forth. But even then, you struggle to get to anywhere near $35 million. I'm pondering putting in an Official Information Act request to try and get a better breakdown, because it just seems inexplicable and in any case, unacceptable.
Yeah, there's talk about mis and disinformation. Sorry, carry on.
No, I mean, you're right. They do run that line about sort of hostile media environments. But if anything, you know, they're the ones who seem to be peddling this disinformation. They never take any responsibility for the fact that high inflation is a result of mistakes in monetary policy. I mean, that's the bottom line. The biggest single issue that all the polls say at the moment is this idea of a cost of living crisis. That's linked to the inflation. That's linked to bad choices the Reserve Bank made in 2020 and 2021. They've lost $11 or $12 billion through their punt in the bond market at that time. That one doesn't have the same public salience. There's a whole bunch of reasons why you wouldn't necessarily have a great deal of trust in Orr and Quigley and their colleagues at the moment.
But the mis and disinformation card is usually played when you have to, just me saying, justify something that's sort of an amorphous blob of $35 million. And it's kind of like, oh, yeah, well, of course, but mis and disinformation, well, that'd be it. Yeah, and you kind of think no more about it. It has that sound to it.
Yeah, I mean, exactly right. But the numbers are just so large. You know, if you looked at it and said 3 million or 3.5 million for that, I probably would have just, my eyes would have just rolled over it. But it's hard to see how you spend those sorts of amounts of money. I mean, the amount of money the government spent on COVID advertising, I think at its peak, was about 100 million a year. Mm-hmm. And that was the sort of thing that's plastering adverts through social media.
Yeah, well, this is why I'm trying to add it up and see how it could be spent.
And that's why I don't know. It's why I almost certainly will lodge a request. I hope some MPs start asking those questions as well, because, you know, this is taxpayers' money, and taxpayers' money is scarce at the moment.
And they talk also, I think, somewhere in there about the world's, you know, rules-based order. Again, that's another ding phrase, you know, along with mis and disinformation that makes you wonder, you know, what corner they're really defending in the end.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much every New Zealand government agency, both parties, constantly runs that as a line. It doesn't have an awful lot of substance, I think, in the context of the Reserve Bank. I mean, mostly the Reserve Bank is doing domestic monetary policy. It's regulating banks domestically. It's not really an internationally focused organisation. I think it's just that, another one of those clichés that government agencies trot out at the moment.
Okay, you know, if the governor of the Reserve Bank was really doing a bad job, you're stuck with him until the term ends. Surely anyone can be fired.
It's very, very difficult to fire a governor, and that's done deliberately. I mean, Parliament delegates monetary policy to the Reserve Bank. What you really don't want is governments putting pressure on the Reserve Bank, say, to fire up the economy just before an election. And so the quid pro quo of that is that when governors mess up, it's deliberately quite hard to get rid of them. There are some circumstances in which you could, but it's practically not an option.
And one of the reasons. What about putting out mis and disinformation? Does that qualify?
There's a specific phrase in there about, you know, misconduct. But the problem is that if you tried to dismiss Orr, he would no doubt go to court, and it would take months, and the financial markets would be in turmoil for months.
Right. Okay.
And even if the government won, it's just not worth the effort. What you can do, though, is replace the chair of the board. You can replace members of the board. You can change expectations.
Yeah.
You can cut his budget. You can build pressure around him and try and incentivize better behavior.
As someone who used to be in the Reserve Bank, how do you feel about it? Is this a once proud institution that sat high above everything and just carried out its mission, fear nor favour? Compare that, I guess, or maybe, you know, still basically that. But what are your thoughts about that?
It's quite sad. I mean, you always have to be a bit careful when you're sort of getting older, the rose-tinted view of your youth. And, you know, when I was there, it was better sort of thing. We made mistakes in my day as well. There's no doubt about that. But I think it's a pretty common view from people inside who were inside the organisation and have never been inside the organisation that the current Reserve Bank, like a lot of New Zealand government institutions, has declined from days when things were operating much better. I mean, a good example that we haven't touched on is they've got a deputy chief executive at the Reserve Bank now who's responsible for monetary policy and macroeconomics, who has a marketing degree. She has no background at all in the subject. You just wouldn't find that in any central bank in any advanced country in the world or in many actual developing countries. Just quite extraordinary. But she's really keen on climate change stuff.
Okay, here we go. I see they mentioned climate change and its impacts in terms of both the physical risks to and adaptation of the economy, society, and the environment to climate change. Look, a lot of us don't even believe the data. So, you know, this is nothing decided. Here they are talking like it's written on a tablet in stone somewhere.
Well, not only that. I mean, I'm quite comfortable with the broad direction of the science, but you know, the Reserve Bank knows nothing more about it than, for example, banks and insurance companies do. So if sea levels are going to rise and climate's going to change over the next 50 or 100 years, banks have plenty of time to adapt their behaviour to that. And no doubt there will be adaptation. If the sea level rises, some places will become uninsurable. Insurance companies can change their insurance policies every year. It's one of those things that you'd expect the Reserve Bank to be vaguely conscious of, as any other sort of economic risks and shocks that might unfold over time. But what's really should worry financial stability supervisors is things that come out of the blue. Now, the scientists tell us climate change is something to worry about now, to worry about over the next 50 or 100 years. Things like the global financial crisis came at us out of the blue. That's what takes down banking systems, things that you didn't see, you weren't worrying about and weren't looking for. A lot of this is just, it is the sort of, you know, conventional woke virtue signaling, if you like. It's the flavour of the day. Does it make much difference to the way in which they run policy? No, it doesn't, frankly. They haven't done much about it, but it's a distraction of attention.
And that line I read came under their heading, it's becoming harder to maintain trust in public institutions. So they're sort of saying the quiet part out loud with that. They're promoting, that's what they're doing. They're promoting a particular approach, let's say.
Indeed, which, you know, no doubt wins friends on a particular sort of strand of the left, alienates a lot of people and just distracts their focus from the core job that they haven't done particularly well. You know, do we have 2% inflation? No, we don't. It's years now since we've had 2% inflation. That's what they should be delivering.
Gosh, those were the good old days, weren't they?
Indeed.
Okay. Any other issues that are occupying your mind while we've got you right now, Michael, that you think is worth us considering?
Those are the main things. I mean, I think, you know, we should be looking at better quality institutions across government. And, you know, for example, yesterday it was announced that the Secretary of the Treasury is leaving. She's not been a particularly impressive appointee. The question now is, will the government look to find a better, stronger person to rebuild that institution as well? And there are a number of questions like that. You know, they haven't appointed a new state services commissioner yet. A lot of what they campaigned on last year was public sector excess, weaknesses of the public sector. You'd have expected a strong person to have been put in to fill that role. So there are some questions there about just how committed this government is to improving those institutions. And to some extent, the problems at the Reserve Bank are just symptomatic of that wider experience.
And the economy right at this moment, we learned there's been a retail slump, worst since the 80s.
Yeah, and I mean, this is really the direct consequence of letting the economy so badly overheat a couple of years ago. We had the most overheated economy in the Western world on IMF figures. Inflation got up really high. It takes a lot to squeeze it back out again, and that's exactly what's happening. Now, you know, you can debate when it's going to be time for the Reserve Bank to start cutting rates. Should it be now? Should it be in 6 months' time? But the answer to that is it depends on how much pain you can inflict to get inflation back down again.
Yeah.
That's tough. And that's really why getting monetary policy right in the first place matters so much. And you know, one of the things I'm critical of them is everyone makes mistakes. You know, we're human. We all do. There's been no sign of any contrition at all from the Reserve Bank. You know, we can accept that they made the mistake. A lot of other country central bankers did. But you'd expect when you'd messed up that badly, when you'd imposed all this dislocation and pain that we're working our way through now, that you'd be really quite contrite. None of that from or any of the members of the MPC, or for that matter, Quigley as chair.
You just hire more PR and media spinners and try and get around it. Okay, really interesting chat. Thank you, Michael Riddell, for coming back on RCR. Let's see how they handle themselves, until sometime next year, where these positions come up for change, right?
Quigley's been reappointed for 2 years. Orr's got another 4 years to run.
Oh, okay. 4 years?
Yep. But they do have a monetary policy committee, and they replace members on the committee every so often. There's a new one just took up his role this week. So, you know, there may be some change there. We'll watch and see.
Well, a lot of our listeners would want these types out sooner than that.
Yeah, well, indeed. But, you know, it's, as I say, it is really difficult, even if the government cared, and there isn't much sign that the government cares.
Okay. Michael Riddell, thanks for coming back on RCR.
Good. Pleasure.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.